Thank you for giving us an opportunity to present this today. This is an evaluation of the performance of the groundfish fishery for fishing year 2012. And this is an evaluation of vessels that were fishing during fishing year 2012 under a limited access groundfish permit. This report was released on Thursday of last week and is available on the center reference document site of the Science Center. And the slide presentation is behind tab 2 in your binder, document 4A. As noted, there are a number of slides in this presentation. I will be skipping a lot of them. I just wanted to provide the council with a little bit of a breakdown of the report. The report is produced by economists in the social sciences branch at the center and also in collaboration with the regional office. So I want to acknowledge the work of my colleagues in the social science branch and also Dan Kalis and Michael Lanning at the regional office. Okay, so this slide gives you an overview of what went on in fishing year 2012. It was a poor year for the fishery. There are decreases in landings and revenue for all species, with all species revenues down $25.3 million or 7.7% from the previous year. In particular, the groundfish portion of the fishery was down dramatically, with landings down and revenues down at a four-year low. Groundfish revenues fell 22.9% from the previous year. The basic message is that partially due to either restricted quota or inherent changes in stock conditions, the groundfish portion of the fishery really struggled, and unfortunately, ground fishermen were not able to make up those revenues with revenues from non-groundfish. So consequently, most measures of economic performance declined for fishing year 2012 relative to 2011. The quota market behaved rather strangely in 2012. It is down in both weight and value, with 23.3 million pounds leased at a value of $8.2 million, and we'll talk more about that shortly. This just gives you a sense of what we're going to cover. This next slide shows you landings for all groundfish vessels, all trips, all species. You can see that both all species revenues are down, and that as a part of that, or comprising that, both groundfish landings are down and non-groundfish landings are down. Groundfish landings were down almost 25%, and non-groundfish landings were nearly constant from the previous year, increasing less than 1%. The next slide shows you total gross revenues in 2012. You can see there that all species revenues fell, and as a part of that, or comprising that, both groundfish revenue fell and groundfish revenue fell. Groundfish revenue fell 22.9% and non-groundfish revenue fell 2%. And this was true for both sector. The declines were seen both for groundfish and non-groundfish for both sector vessels and common pool vessels. The next slide shows you average price per pound for both groundfish and non-groundfish. Groundfish average price increased, with all groundfish species rising in price except for redfish and witch flounder, which barely moved. The largest price increase was for haddock. You see that average non-groundfish price has decreased from 2011. Other things to note is that the common pool vessels continue to command a little bit of a premium in the price that they receive for their fish, and that's true both for groundfish and non-groundfish species. The differential for groundfish is about 28 cents a pound, and the difference for non-groundfish is about 10 cents a pound. Okay, this next slide just focuses on groundfish. It shows you information that was presented in previous slides. Again, they're down 24.9% revenues. And this again is being driven by decreases in landings because you know that average price of ground fish increased. So this is really, these declines in revenue are really driven by the declines in landings of ground fish. This next slide shows you the values of the 9 allocated ground fish species. You can see that cod is way down, haddock is way down. Cod is down 45.5% for revenues and 52.2% for landings. Haddock was down 62.1% for revenue and 73.3% for landings. We saw decreases in revenue for cod, haddock, yellowtail flounder, witch flounder, and pollock. Large declines in cod and haddock are being driven by declines in landings because the price of both those species increased in 2012. This just graphs how the non-groundfish portion of the groundfish fishery has been changing over time. So you can see that non-groundfish landings account for over 80% of the total landings of the fleet and over 75% of the revenues for the fleet in 2012. Okay. This next graph shows you non-groundfish revenue. Again, we've talked about this before, but it fell by 1.9% from 2011. And this was due to both falls in landings and falls in average price. The next slide shows you the value of the top non-groundfish species landed by the limited access groundfish fleet with the exclusion of scallops, which are on a separate graph. Because they're entirely different magnitude. So you can see that lobster, longfin, squid, monkfish, and silver hake were the second, third, fourth, and fifth most valued non-groundfish species landed by the fleet in 2012. This next slide shows you sea scallops, which is the top non-groundfish species landed by the fleet. Things are relatively stable there. Scallop revenue accounts for 29% of all species revenue that the fleet lands or earns, and it accounts for 38% of non-ground fish revenue. I recall last year that Mr. Neese has had a question about how many boats are actually earning that revenue. I did a little bit of background on that. So there are 84 permits that have more than $100,000 in revenue from sea scallops, and that comprises about 6% of the total limited access groundfish eligibilities. Okay, this next section I'm just going to summarize, so I'm actually going to end up skipping to slide 22, but let me give you a little bit of background. All species and groundfish revenues fell in all states except for Connecticut and Maine. Connecticut and Maine actually saw increases. In New Hampshire, all species revenue was at a four-year low for the period. Groundfish revenues fell for Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Rhode Island, with Massachusetts and New Hampshire at four-year lows. All species and groundfish revenues declined in 5 out of the 6 major Northeast ports, with Chatham and Gloucester having groundfish revenues and all species revenues at a four-year low. The exception to what went on in the ports is in Portland, Maine, where all species and groundfish revenue were actually at a four-year high. So the next several slides show you this by home port state. We can come back to these if you'd like, but in the interest of time, I'm going to move through them. Okay, the next section deals with the number of vessels and vessel affiliations. It's very important that I emphasize here that the emphasis is on active vessels and active vessel affiliations. Okay, so when I say active, I mean that they've had revenue from some species while fishing under a limited access groundfish permit. One thing to note here is that permits placed in confirmation of permit history are increasing They are up 35.7% in 2012 from 2011, with 60 additional groundfish permits placed into confirmation of permit history. And permits in confirmation of permit history account for 16.2% of all of the limited access groundfish permits. You can see from this slide that there are fewer active vessels in the groundfish fleet, and this is true across all vessel class sizes. Okay, the vessel class sizes being under 30 feet, between 30 and 50 feet, 50 to under 75 and 75 plus. So every single vessel class saw a decline in the number of active vessels. The decline was 1.5% from 2011 and 16.6% from 2009. Currently, there are 764 active vessels, meaning that they landed some species. They earned revenue from landing some species while fishing under limited access groundfish permit. 446 of those are in sectors, 320 are in the common pool. The common pool has been contracting, and the amount or the percentage of vessels enrolled in sectors has been increasing. This next slide shows you active vessels that took at least one groundfish trip. So you can think about these vessels as being those that are actively targeting groundfish. Here we see fewer active vessels across all vessel class sizes as well. Pretty much all of the decline that's coming in the number of active vessels is coming from those that actively target groundfish. Okay. And I think that's important to emphasize. In 2012, there were 401 vessels that took at least one groundfish trip. 304 of those were in the sectors. 97 of those were in the common pool. The decline in the number of vessels taking a groundfish trip was 4.3% in the last year, and 29.2% since 2009. This next slide shows you number of vessel affiliations. The consolidation that is occurring in the groundfish fleet and in the number of vessels and vessel affiliations is coming from fewer ownership groups. It is not coming from consolidating onto one vessel. So it's not coming from a vessel affiliation deciding to consolidate its landings on one vessel instead of three. And we can see that, you can read more details about that in the report, but it's actually coming from attrition from the number of ownership groups. And specifically, it's coming from attrition from vessel affiliations that land groundfish, that take a groundfish trip, target groundfish, and land groundfish. So you can see the changes over the years. The blue bar is vessel affiliations that land any species. The green bar is vessel affiliations that have taken at least one groundfish trip. In 2012, there are a total of 618 active vessel affiliations that landed any species. This is down 2.4% from 2011 and 16.3% from 2009. Of those, 310 took a groundfish trip. The number of vessel affiliations that took a groundfish trip declined 8% from 2011 and 31% from 2009. When we look at vessel affiliations that were active but did not take a groundfish trip, there's not attrition there. Okay, in 2012, there were 308 active affiliations that did not take a groundfish trip. That number is up 4.4% from 2011 and up 7.3% from 2009. The percentage of vessel affiliations that is inactive has remained relatively stable between 2009 and 2012. Also, the number of active vessels per vessel affiliation is 1.23, so the average vessel affiliation has 1.23 active vessels. That has been unchanged from 2011 to 2012. Okay, this next section talks about crew employment. Basically, the news is pretty bad everywhere. Our ability to measure crew employment is somewhat limited, but let me take you through that. Here we have the number of trips, the number of crew trips by vessel size class. This is at a four-year low across vessel class sizes. In the next slide, we have the number of crew days by vessel size category. Okay, this is at a four-year low for the smallest vessels and the largest vessels. It's down from 2011 for the 30 to less than 50 feet class, and up less than 1% for the 50 foot to 75 foot class. So mostly down, with the exception of that third class of vessels where it's up less than 1%. This next slide summarizes the trends in crew employment. Most vessel classes lost crew positions, down about 1%. However, for the under 30-foot class, they lost 5.1% of their crew positions in 2012 relative to 2011. The number of crew positions fell in 2012 in all home port states except Maine and New Jersey. And in terms of percentages, not absolute crew positions, but percentages, New Hampshire had the largest decline, which was 9%. Total crew trips are also falling. They fell 4.6% in 2012, and declines occurred across vessel class sizes. And all home port states lost crew trips except Connecticut and Maine. Crew trips were at a four-year low in the home ports of Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New Jersey, and Rhode Island. The number of crew days decreased for most vessel classes. The average decrease was 1.1%. Again, the exception was the 50 to less than 75-foot class, which saw a very slight uptick of 1%. The number of crew days fell in Massachusetts, New York, and Rhode Island, and rose in Connecticut, Maine, New Hampshire, and New Jersey. But the number of the ratio, when you look at the ratio of crew days to crew trips, we think about that as sort of what time are you spending per earning opportunity. And we see that more time is being spent per earning opportunity. So people are working harder per earning opportunity in all home port states except New York and Rhode Island. And at the same time, the number of opportunities is declining. So there's less opportunities for crew to earn money. Okay, this next section focuses on leasing activity. I have to credit Chad Demarest with much of this analysis. The amount of allocated ACE that was caught was down in 2012. It was down to 32% from 41% in 2011. The next slide shows you the weight in the leasing market. The weight of the leasing market is down. Okay, it is overall 23.3 million live pounds were leased. 47% of that weight is leased within vessel affiliations. And the next slide shows you the value of the leasing market. That is also down in 2012. The yellow bar shows you the transfers between MRIs, and the green bar shows you the transfers between vessel affiliations. The value of quota leased declined 45.8% from 2011. This next slide summarizes leasing activity. If you look at the stock level, utilization rates ranged from 4% for Georges Bank West Haddock to 85% for Cape Cod, Gulf of Maine, Yellowtail Flounder. Massachusetts and the home port of Gloucester have the largest percent of lessees. and the vessel class of 30 to less than 50 feet has the largest percentage of lessees or people who lease in. Three stocks essentially traded at a price of zero. Those stocks were East and West, Georges Bank Haddock, an American Place founder. The Gulf of Maine cod lease price fell. The highest lease price went to East Georges Bank cod. And oddly, that estimated price is actually higher than the ex-vessel price. So the estimated lease price was $2.48 per pound, and the ex-vessel price was $1.08 per pound. And that is very strange. The lowest non-zero prices were for pollock, redfish. Okay, this next section talks about performance of the active groundfish fleet. At this point, these revenues are unadjusted for leasing activity. We do some adjustments for leasing activity, but I will talk about those when we get there. Fishing effort was generally down in 2012. The number of vessels, as you know, was down for both landing any species and taking groundfish trips. For groundfish trips, the number of groundfish trips was down. The total days absent on groundfish trips were down. Because the number of trips is falling more rapidly than the number of days absent, we can see that average trip length is slightly longer on a groundfish trip. For non-groundfish trips, the number of non-groundfish trips is also down. And results with respect to days absent on non-groundfish trips are generally down, except for, I believe, one vessel class size. So, in general, effort is lower in the fishery. Okay, I'm going to skip through these next two slides. Just let me note that they show you what gross revenues are per vessel for groundfish trips and non-groundfish trips. My guess is what you're most interested in is net revenue, so I'm going to move along. I'm happy to go back to these slides if you wish. Okay, so I want to give you a little bit of background on how we adjust for net revenue. Again, how we calculate net revenue or estimate it. Again, at this point, we're not adjusting for leasing activity. So when I talk about revenue here, I'm talking about revenue from landing fish. I'm not talking about any revenues from leasing out quota or adjusting for any cost for leasing in quota. So to do this, we looked at the trip costs that are collected on observed trips for fuel, oil, ice, bait, food, water, and damages. We also account for lumpers fee and sector membership fees. There are some costs that we may not be accounting for, and those include communication and trucking costs. There are limitations to this analysis, okay? At this point, the major one is that we're not accounting for leasing cost. We also are not accounting for fixed cost. And the reason for that is we've just recently obtained fixed cost data. Obviously, a larger vessel is likely to have larger fixed costs. So it's very important to remember that net revenue does not equal profit. Because you can have a large vessel that's taking in large amounts of revenue and paying out its trip costs, but it can have enormous fixed costs, which are not accounted for in this analysis. Couple of notes on how we go about doing this. We use sample trips, and then we estimate average trip cost per day absent for 80 vessel types. Those types are based on gear, vessel length, trip duration, and fishing year. We did make some assumptions about how the vessel was operated. Those assumptions are listed for you there. We are collecting more information on that, but at this time we had to make assumptions about whether the vessel was owner-operated or operated by a hired captain. Okay, this next slide shows average per-day values on groundfish trips. Okay. Now, remember, this is assuming you've gone out on a groundfish trip. What are your earnings per day? You can see that, in general, that owner share and crew share are increasing in these two smaller vessel class sizes. But, again, this is when you go out. per day. Okay, as we'll see later, the opportunities to go out are lower, and so please bear in mind as we're going through these figures that this is what you're earning when you go out on average, and it is an average based on vessel class size. The next slide shows what's going on with the two larger vessel class sizes. You can see that we are seeing owner share go up in the 50 to less than 75-foot category, but falling for the 75-foot-plus category. For the 75-foot-plus category, owner share declined 24.7% from 2011. For the lower three or smaller three vessel class sizes, we did see increases. Those increases ranged from 26.6% to 102% since 2011. But again, this is assuming that you're out on a trip. What are you earning on average? Okay. The next slide shows the same set of values for non-ground fish trips. You can see that for most vessel class sizes, these are for the smaller vessel class size here, they're down, and they're slightly up for the 30 to less than 50 foot category, but not very dramatic changes. In the next slide, you see that they are down for the larger two categories. Okay, generally they're not as low as they were in 2009 and 2010, but they're down from 2011. The next slide shows you average value per vessel compared to 2011. And again, this is unadjusted for leasing cost. Okay, so you see the under 30-foot category and the 30 to less than 50-foot category. Okay. In both cases, crew share and owner share declined. For owner share, the decline was 3.6% for the less than 30-foot category and 15.1% for the 30 to less than 50-foot category. The next slide shows you per vessel values for the larger two vessel class sizes. Okay, again, you can see that declines occurred for both the 50 to less than 75 foot category and the 75 foot plus category. This next slide shows you aggregate owner share and crew share, or what we would call fleet level owner share and crew share. You can see that there are declines for the smallest vessel class category and the 30 to less than 50-foot class category. On average, overall, across vessel sizes, owner share fell 9.3% for owners and 8.8% for crew in 2012 relative to 2011. If you look at the 30 to less than 50 feet category, owner share and crew share are at a four-year low for the period. The next slide shows you the fleet level values for the larger vessel class sizes. Again, you see declines in both owner share and crew share. And these declines occurred across home port states with the exception of Connecticut. So here's where you're seeing that dynamic play out where you might be earning higher average returns on ground fish trips per day when you're out, but your opportunities to go out are limited. There are fewer trips. So you see this play out in the aggregate numbers here because owner share overall and crew share overall for the fleet of the whole are down. Okay. This next section talks about consolidation and distribution of revenues. I want to emphasize here that this section talks about consolidation and distribution of revenues from landings. So it does, or from use of the fishery resource. It does not reflect consolidation and distribution of revenue from ownership of quota. okay, or what we would think of ownership of access to the fishery. So you want to keep that distinction in mind as we move through this. Okay, this just talks about what definitions of consolidation and revenues are and distribution of revenues. I try to keep that distinction clear in the ground fish report because a lot of people use the terms consolidation and concentration interchangeably. Consolidation in the way that I've thought about it for this report means that there are fewer active vessels or vessel affiliations earning these revenues. Distribution or concentration has the way that they're getting cut up among remaining participants in the fishery different. Okay, so there are a lot of metrics around this, which I would refer you to in Section 6 of the Ground Fish Report if you're interested. Let's take a look at the number of vessels and vessel affiliations landing the top 50% of all species revenue. Okay, there was a slight decrease in the number of vessels and vessel affiliations landing the top 50%. So that suggests that it's slightly more concentrated than it was in 2011. It's very slight. I should emphasize that. Most of the change that you're seeing occurred between 2009 and 2010. From 2011 to 2012, we saw a slight decrease in concentration or a slightly more equitable distribution. That has not continued to become more equal or equitable. It's actually become a little bit less equal. Okay. Another way of looking at this to kind of account for the fact that part of the reason those numbers may be going down is because the number of active vessels and active vessel affiliations is going down. So one of the things we also look at is percentages. So in 2011, 13.7% of active vessels earned the top 50% of all species revenue. In 2012, that percentage dropped to 13.4%. So, again, a very, very small change. If you look at active vessel affiliations, in 2011, 8.4% of active vessel affiliations earned the top 50% of all species revenue. In 2012, that number had increased to 8.6%. So very small changes from 2011 to 2012. But let me stress that all species revenues have never been equitably or equally distributed ever. So I don't mean to downplay where we're at. I just mean to indicate that there are very small changes since 2011. When we look at ground fish revenues, they are more concentrated than all species revenues. That has continued. That has always been the case since 2009 anyway, and probably before that. And that continues to be the case in 2012. Again, here we have seen decreases in the number of active vessels and active vessel affiliations earning the top 50% of ground fish revenue. We also looked at percentages to account for the fact that there are fewer vessels and fewer vessel affiliations landing ground fish. So in 2011, 9.6% of the active vessels earned the top 50% of revenues. In 2012, that number was 9.4%. So again, a very small change. In 2011, 4.7% of active vessel affiliations earned 50%, the top 50% of the ground fish revenue. In 2012, that number decreased to 4.5%. So again, a small change, and you can see that in the graph. This next graph looks at something called the Gini coefficient. Short story on the Gini coefficient. A zero coefficient is perfect equality. A one coefficient is perfect inequality. Again, you can see that there hasn't been too much change since 2011. There was a big jump in this coefficient from 2009 to 2010. From 2011 to 2012, there's a slight increase for ground fish. This number was 0.810 in 2011. It is now 0.818 or 0.818. So a little bit of an increase. Not sure what to say. I will say that things are not becoming less concentrated. Okay. Some indication that they may be becoming a tiny bit more concentrated. All species revenue is still very unequally distributed, but less unequally than groundfish revenue. Again, there we see a slight change. That coefficient was 0.689 in 2011, and in 2012 it was 0.694. So very, very small changes. Again, both of these revenues are, you know, not equally distributed. They continue to be not equally distributed. It certainly hasn't improved. It may have slightly gotten worse. But, again, I'm hesitant to read too much into such small changes. Okay, in this next section, we're going to take those net revenues that we showed earlier, and we're going to do an analysis which attempts to account for leasing activity. I need to credit my colleague, Drew Kitts, for this work. There are a lot of assumptions here, so I'm going to go through those. I'm going to skip a lot of the intermediate steps. I want you to have them so that you know where how we got from one slide to another, but I'm going to push ahead here. So this slide will give you some background. What you want to keep in mind is that trades that occur between sectors are tracked by NIMS. Trades that occur within sectors are voluntarily reported. Okay, and they were voluntarily reported for the first time in 2012. Not all sectors report those within-sector trades the same way, which limits what we can do with the data. 17 out of 20 did provide that information. Two of the ones that didn't are permit banks. So again, we really appreciate that information. It allows us to improve our analysis. But we do have limitations on how much analysis of leasing activity we can do. It's very hard to track permits once they're in CPH. And there are a number of other issues which we can speak to, but I'm going to move along. Okay. So what we did was we limited the analysis of the quota trades because of data limitations to net revenue at the sector member level. Okay. And we could only do this in calculating the averages. We could only do this based on sector members that we could identify in the year-end sector reports. Okay. So again, the data is limited there. Okay. The unadjusted net revenues that you saw earlier were reported for the entire population of active vessels and included common pool vessels. And what you're going to see from here on out does not. Okay, it includes sectors only or sector members only. Another assumption that had to be made, which is a very strong assumption but was unavoidable, is that when trades occur of a stock, they occur at the same price throughout the year. We know that's a strong assumption. We know it's not an accurate assumption, but we had to make it to be able to get us to where we were going. This just gives you a breakdown of quota activity in 2012. The total value of quota traded was $14.1 million. 16.2 of that occurred between sectors. 7 million of it occurred within sectors. This gives you a little bit of information about stocks traded. The four most highly valued stocks through trades were Georges Bank Winter Flounder, White Hake, Gulf of Maine Cod, Western Georges Bank Cod. The two sectors that have the highest costs associated with leasing in quota or are the Northeast Fisheries Sector 9 and the Northeast Fisheries Sector 2. The two sectors that get the most revenue from trading, from leasing out their quota to people, to others, are Northeast Fisheries Sector 4 and the Fixed Gear Sector. Okay, this graph, which I know is hard to see, What it does is it nets out all the trades within a sector and shows you the final trading position. So basically it shows you which sectors lease in, which sectors lease out. Okay. So what we did was we took the average net revenue estimates for sector members, which you have in your upcoming slides, and we adjusted them by adding trading cost or trading revenues. We defined 12 sector member types or groups, okay? And this was based on vessel length category and the vessel ownership category, meaning how many vessels did they own, were they in CPH or not. Another strong assumption here that we made is that the vessel owner pays leasing costs. That is made. We know that it's not correct in many, many cases, but at this time it was the best that we could do, given that we have limited data on how those leasing costs may or may not get passed on to crew. Okay, I'm going to skip the next few slides, and I'm going to go to slide 69. The next few slides basically take you through what net revenue looks like unadjusted per sector member based on these sector types, and then looks at revenues from either leasing out or leasing in quota based on sector type. I want you to be able to see how we got there, but I'm going to skip to the punchline, which is how does net revenue change percentage-wise. So I'm going to go to slide 69. Okay, so this tells you the percent change in average owner share after adjusting for leasing activity. Okay. In the under 30-foot category, okay, if you have one vessel that is not, well, is not in CPH, so you own one non-CPH vessel, on average, you lease out your quota, okay, or you earn revenue from leasing out quota. And this changes your revenues, your net revenue, by over 150%. So you're earning a lot of revenue from leasing out your quota. If you have two non-CPH vessels, you lease out, but much less so. Okay, so you can see the percentage change in revenue there from revenues earned that are from leasing out your quota. If you were in this vessel class size, but you had more than two non-CPH vessels, you actually leased in quota. So you incurred cost to lease in quota. In the second vessel class size, 30 to less than 50 feet, you can see that on average, all three of these vessel types lease in quota. Okay? So you see it there for one non-CPH vessel, two, and then more than two. Okay? And the dark blue bar represents the percentage change in average owner share per sector member. The lighter blue bar represents the average owner share per vessel. Moving on to the next vessel class size, 50 to less than 75 feet, you see the same situation. Okay, on average, these sector members are leasing in quota. So you see how their net revenue is reduced by those leasing costs in terms of percentages. You can see the actual numbers if you go back to your earlier slides. Finally, moving on to the largest vessel class size, the folks that had one vessel in this class size, 75-foot plus, leased in quota. Those that had two vessels in this class size, leased out quota. And again, you can see the percentage changes there. Most of those percentage changes, there are some extremes, but most of them are in the 6 to 8% range. Okay, there are extremes, but around 6 to 8% for most cases. The next slide summarizes all of that, okay? Reductions in owner share from leasing in range from 3.9 to 25.7%. Again, most in the 6 to 8% range. Leasing revenue, meaning you lease out quota and you earn revenue from leasing out that quota. If you own a single vessel less than 30 feet in length, your net revenue increased by an average of 167%. Okay. For sector members with two of these vessels, with the average length of those vessels less than 30 feet, your average net revenue increased by 17%. And if you had a two vessels that were larger than 75 feet on average, averaging the two lengths together, you increased your net revenue by about 8.7%. Okay. About a third of sector members do not fish for allocated groundfish. That doesn't mean they don't fish at all, but they don't fish for allocated groundfish, and they lease out their quota to fishermen that do fish for allocated groundfish. Now, that doesn't mean that the sector member that buys those fish or leases those fish catches them all, okay? You want to keep that in mind. It doesn't mean, and also to reiterate, it doesn't mean that the sector members that didn't fish for allocated groundfish didn't fish at all. Okay. So this looks at average revenue that was earned from leasing out quota if you didn't fish for allocated groundfish. Okay. And you can see what this looks like across vessel ownership categories for the smallest vessel size class. The next few slides do the same thing. This negative $98,000 figure, this has given us a lot of pause. There appears to be, from the sector reports, year-end reports, someone in this vessel class size that did not fish for allocated groundfish but bought quota. We're going to investigate whether this is possibly an error because it doesn't seem to make any sense, but that's the number as it is. Big question mark over that big dark blue bar. Okay. Okay. Here, in some cases, we either don't have other ownership categories like two non-CPH vessels or more than two, and in some cases, we have not presented that data to protect confidentiality. This shows you what average revenue from leasing out quota if you did not fish for allocated groundfish looks like in the 50 to less than 75 foot category, and finally for the 75 foot plus category. We also were able to identify 11 sector members with CPH permits only. There are probably more, but we were able to identify 11. And based on that, that shows you their average revenue per inactive member. When we say inactive, we mean in terms of fishing for allocated groundfish. Okay, so the final slide kind of summarizes some of these results. Average revenue for people that did not fish was $49,000 to $48,000, give or take a little bit. And then if you, okay, so that ends that. Again, there are steps to get there. If you want to see the actual figures rather than just the percentage changes, I encourage you to go back to those slides. And I'm happy to take questions by email or just, may I finish or?
Yeah, Chris, please do.
Okay. So I just wanted to emphasize what the center is trying to do in terms of moving ahead and improving our analysis. I know a lot of you are interested in profitability. That's sort of the end game in many ways. We do have data that has come in from cost surveys that we've conducted over the last 2 years for costs incurred in 11 and 12. For those fishing vessel owners that filled those out, we thank you. We now have fixed cost data on over 800 fishing vessels, which we are analyzing, and we'll be beginning to discuss those results at the Fishermen's Forum in about a month's time. The center also participated in a series, has participated in one workshop to date to understand what constrained fishing in 2012. From the center, Chad Demarest has been involved in that effort, and Mark Brandt from the regional office and many others, but that's part of what we're working on. We're also working on building profitability profiles. What we're going to do is try to build them for various segments of the fleet to begin with. Again, that fixed cost data is essential to doing that because you can't calculate profit if you don't have fixed cost information. And finally, we recognize that this report, two things. One, a lot gets lost in aggregate statistics and averages, and you know that. Secondly, there are many gentlemen that are no longer actively ground fishing. This report doesn't represent their situation. There's a lot that we don't know. In an effort to better understand what kinds of transitions ground fishermen may be going through, we're conducting ethnographic interviews in the region. We've done 16 to date in Gloucester and Scituate. Over the next day, I will do 4 here in New Hampshire, and we're going to be continuing that effort, assuming that we're funded to do it. So these are some of the things that we're doing to move forward. Again, I had to zoom through this, a lot of detail, but I'm happy to take questions by email and, of course now.
Yeah, thank you very much, Tammy, for compressing a whole lot of information into a very succinct presentation. We've got time for about 15 minutes worth of questions. Frank, Laura, John, Terry, and we'll see who else.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to make sure I heard that correctly, and I'm not sure. It was between 4 and 8% of the boats. It was either landings or revenues that do 50% of the revenue. So roughly 4 or 8% of the boats are catching most of the fish, or at least the money from it, which means 92% of the fleet is dividing up the rest. And if I heard it correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, that 80% of the fleet is catching non-ground fish for their revenue. Am I somewhat correct so far? It was in the beginning. It was number of vessels. I believe it was. It was either 4 or 8%. That was either the revenues or the landings. And it was 80% of groundfish vessels. Their revenue is from non-groundfish species. And I think that. Okay, but I mean, if that's the case, I think we have 4% or 8% of the fleet that is dependent on groundfish. We have 92% that are catching 80% of their revenue or something else. I think the overarching question, if I've got it correctly, is do we have a groundfish fleet? Or are these boats other boats that are catching groundfish? It's a very different question as we move forward, because if 80% of the revenues of the groundfish fleet are non-groundfish species, which I think is what I took away, there's only 4% of the boats that are wholly dependent, or at least they're earning most of their income from groundfish. And is that the takeaway?
I think what you're concluding, over 80% of the landings are from groundfish, and revenues is like, I think it's over 70% without going back. But that doesn't mean that there aren't boats catching, you know, it doesn't mean that you can slice that up vessel-wise. So this actually shows you how many vessels are taking a groundfish trip, which means they're at least trying to target groundfish. Right?
Right, but if a vessel takes one groundfish trip and 80% of his revenue was from something else, is he a groundfish vessel?
Well, that's on average, though. Right? It's not talking.
I mean, I'm not saying, but I'm looking at it. I don't think somebody who makes 90% of the revenue at something else and makes one groundfish trip, I don't consider him a groundfish vessel.
Okay, we don't distinguish between levels of groundfish vessels in this analysis, just to be clear. So whether you took 1 or 10 or 100, which is unlikely, but you know, you are in this number of people that took at least one groundfish trip.
So my conclusion may be different, but I think I have the information correct.
Yeah. I think it's important to, you know, it's kind of interesting because I've heard people characterize, and this may not speak directly to your question, but I've heard people characterize the sector vessels as they're the groundfish vessels, and the common pool guys were never really groundfish guys to begin with, which is why they don't have an allocation. But if you look at the declines in all species revenue, they're driven by the declines in groundfish. and over 80% of the declines in all species revenue are due to declines in groundfish. And that's true not only for the sector vessels, but also for the common pool. So even though many people think of the common pool vessel owners as never having been groundfish fishermen in the first place, which is why they have low allocation, if they don't catch as many groundfish, they feel it. I mean, over 80% of their decrease in revenue came from decreases in groundfish. But, I mean, it's true that non-groundfish is becoming increasingly important for the fleet, but it's not solving the problems because we can see here that even though, you know, there was non-groundfish activity, it wasn't able to compensate for what they were losing in groundfish. So it's important to keep all that in mind.
Laura.
Thank you for your presentation. Yes. I'd like to have your PR team. I like the last line. Adaptation and transition. That's a nice spin on what's going on for these poor, for these individuals that are really suffering. So we had seven scientists put together the information into, or social scientists, into these 82 slides. And I'm not a scientist, and I got a C in the one econ class that I took. But I did go through this morning, and I compared it with the commercial summary table. And I guess I was a little alarmed that there wasn't a single slide or page that looked at how things might have been different had we actually caught the ace. And I think about what Dr. Sissonwine said earlier, that the amount of time we were spending on window pane flounder and accountability measures, and thinking about sitting in the groundfish meeting last week about basically redistribution through Amendment 18. And so we spend a lot in inshore and offshore and infighting. And I thought, gosh, what if we as a council focused on the one thing that would make a real difference? What if we focused on optimizing yield? And what if our social scientists looked at what the dollar values are represented by the amount of fish that we're leaving in the ocean? This is not fish that is for conservation. This is fish we've said is okay to catch based on our science. And so we look at our partners to the north that we sit at a table with, and they are catching 1 million pounds of haddock last weekend. 1 million pounds. And we can't catch more than 7.5%, 6.3%. 3% and 47.3%. What does that mean in terms of dollars? And what would those dollars mean to our fishing fleet? And I think more than slicing and dicing and revenue and gross revenue and size of vessels and who's got what, let's come together and figure out how we get these individuals to catch fish. And when I sat in groundfish last week, and John, I'm sorry, we're not going to be friends right now, but when I sat in groundfish and we talked about why, and I'm beating this horse, we did not let sectors use sector op plans to go after viable species. It was because of a fear of misreporting, and I might be mischaracterizing, and I apologize if I am, but God, I'm willing to risk a little bit of misreporting if we can catch something better than 7.5 or 6.3. And maybe then the ground fishermen wouldn't be dealing with adaptation and transition. We might actually be having some signs of profitability. Thank you.
Okay, one thing. I don't have a PR team, just to clear the record. let me say a few things. I think, one, that people are interested in the question you're asking. Would fishing look any different if quota hadn't been constrained? That was the purpose of the first workshop that was held on the 15th. I will also tell you that question is much more complicated than maybe it might seem. I have talked with a lot of fishermen at this point, and this is a simplifying statement, but there are two groups of fishermen. There are fishermen that believe they did not have enough quota, and there are fishermen that believe the fish just aren't there. That even, and this, you know, if you are able to obtain some notes from the workshop, there are fishermen that basically believe that even if quota had been less constrained, their fishing may not have looked that much different. That's not all fishermen. There are definitely fishermen out there that are give us more fish. But many fishermen are reporting that the fish simply aren't there. Others are more in your, you know, you're more in your viewpoint that it's an issue of quota and that they're afraid of running into cod, which is what constrains their catch of other stocks. So I don't discount your perspective, but I will say that there's more than one perspective out there on that and that we are concerned with the question.
Just a brief follow-up, I promise, is that I'm not saying that fishermen should be getting more quota. I'm saying we should be working as a council and as a body to figure out how to catch the quota that is there. And I understand that there are people that say the reason why we're not catching it is because the fish aren't there. But there's some medium out there. And there are reasons that we aren't catching these that we could change, starting with allowing access to areas that are where fish are abundant, that these people could be catching abundant species of quota that has been allocated to them. I'm not asking for additional quota. I'm asking for access to catching healthy resource.
I think that there's a sincere effort to understand why more quota wasn't, more of the existing quota was not caught in 2012.
John.
I don't want to go over the access argument again, but I also share the observation that Frank put forth. But I think I want to pursue in a slightly different way the line that Laura was pursuing. And I'm looking at slide 34, summary of leasing activity, Tammy. And again, thank you for presenting us with a huge amount of information in a short amount of time. And I'm, you know, in terms of how do we catch optimum yield, how do we catch the quotas that are there? How do we operate efficiently? How do the sectors work efficiently? I'm trying to understand this. And so in that slide, there were a couple of statistics you presented us. One was that the value of quota leased declined 45% from 2011 to 2012. So the amount of quota that was leased declined a lot. Now, my guess is that if someone has quota that he or she fails to lease at the end of the year, then the value that they get for that quota at the end of the year, what would that be? Zero?
It's a foregone opportunity because they basically didn't use the quota to earn revenue from landing the fish themselves, nor did they use an asset that they have the access to earn revenues from leasing that access to someone else.
So there's an opportunity.
It's an opportunity cost.
That got them $0. And so mm-hmm. that opportunity, that declined 45%. They didn't lease. They didn't get anything for that. And 32% of the ace was caught in 2012, down from 41%. Now, I use the argument that the failure to catch ace was indicative of there not being fish, and I was criticized. No, that isn't it at all. It's much more complicated than that. Now, I'm sure there are many, many reasons, and you explained, and other people have explained, it may be a case in some circumstances that fish are hard to find, but it may be a case that people don't have, that there are choke species and people don't have quota to go out and catch it, and that's a reason that people don't catch it. But so if they don't have a quota to go out and catch it, then part of it is, well, I thought that you could go out and lease it to go catch it, but now it looks like the ability to lease, that's gone down 45%, and the people who are holding on to it get nothing at the end of the year. If they're not getting their price, well, the price is zero at the end of the year. So there's some inefficiency that's going on where the people who need it can't get it, so they can't go fish. The people who want to sell it get nothing at the end of the year, and this problem is getting worse because from 2012 to 2011, the amount of leasable quota went down 45%. So I thought sectors was supposed to encourage this kind of movement back and forth. So in an ideal situation at the end of the year, all of the quota would be used, and that would be an efficient system. And instead, it's like ossified, and we have people not able to use it to go chase fish, and people who had it end up with a foregone opportunity, to use your words. And I'm just wondering, you've gone into this and kind of lived this, whether you have any. I'm seeing an inefficient system. I'm trying to figure out where it's inefficient. If you have some observations to help me understand what's happening here.
I don't have a definitive answer. I know that this is something that I've talked about in my interviews with fishermen and then, of course, was talked about in the workshop that was held on the 15th. The leasing market is not behaving as economic theory would predict, or there are efficiencies, as you're saying. I hesitate to draw too many conclusions from the interviews I've done, so I'm going to caveat this, but one of the things I'm hearing is that people are holding on to quota. Now, whether they're holding on to it in hopes of getting a higher price later in the fishing year, or I also have seen a few guys that are simply in a state of paralysis. They don't know what to do. And I really think, and this is a little bit more of a sentimental statement that I would typically make, but I really think that they see it as leasing out part of their identity. They've been active fishermen. Something's happened where they've had to either decrease their activity or eliminate their activity, and they see leasing out that, some of them see leasing out that quota as leasing out their identity as an active fisherman. And I don't know how to put it any other way, but I think that's a lot of what's going on. So they're holding on to the quota. In some cases, the price that they're asking for the quota is simply too high. Now, you would expect that there would be give and take and that, you know, the buyer of the quota and the seller of the quota would arrive at the middle. In some cases, that's not happening. And as an economist, that's troubling to me. It doesn't make sense. But when you think about it, they might be – I met one gentleman from Gloucester. He had to sell his vessel. He's trying to figure out – he's in his 50s. He's trying to figure out who he's going to be. He's never been anything but a fisherman. He's holding on to his quota. He's hoping maybe he can buy a smaller vessel. His price for his quota, according to his sector manager, is too high. So the quota is not moving. But I think it's because and again, I hate to attribute too much to these interviews because I've only done 16 of them to date. But I think it's because it really is this, like, if I let you set this quota – this is it. Like, I'm sort of not a fisherman anymore, and I'm really not ready to let that go. And I think for some guys, it's they might be holding out for a higher price later in the season. You know, you might want to buy quota to go fishing, but if you're already underwater, and many of these guys are, you just don't have the money. And you can't take the gamble that you're going to catch the fish because you don't know. You know, some of them think they will, some of them think they won't. So, I there's a lot of stuff going on, but this is some of what I've been thinking of myself as I've talked to gentlemen. And some of this was reflected in the discussion on the 15th. There was a lot of discussion about fear and uncertainty and paralysis.
Well, you might not be speaking like an economist. You're speaking like a human being, and maybe that gets us closer to the truth. But you're also giving figures that are about 2012, and 2012 is completed. And so for whatever reason, they hold on at the end of 2012. They're left with zero. And so it is important for all of us, and as I say it very sincerely, I'm trying to understand this because it hurts people real. You know, the hurt is real. And so it's incumbent on all of us to figure out how to make this work better so a person isn't left with something at the end where they look at it, it is their life, and, you know, it's zero.
We've got more hands than we have time. I think what the best thing for us to do is to take a quick break and go into Amendment 18. I think I'm hoping you can stay here, Tammy, because a lot of this conversation.
Yes, I'll be here for the rest of the day.
Is applicable for our discussion of Amendment 18.
Yes.
So let's take a quick 10-minute break at 3:30. We'll be 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 break at